Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Wouldn't that be beautiful, having the federal government out of so many aspects of our lives and the states being able to unleash all the resources and all the necessary things to employ and to allow its citizens to be prosperous and to make a better life for their posterity? Well, one can dream, can't one? The show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. You are listening to the only show that asserts a constitutional solution to getting the general government back into that framework of the Constitution, which is a very limited and defined government. As I try to impress upon people, this show is dedicated in supporting state legislators willing to commit to protecting their citizens from federal tyranny. A part of this, a good part of this show, is actually dedicated to those grassroots leaders, the employers of the state legislators, which are those county chairs, the chairman, or whatever your county calls them at the central committee. There's some states, like in the Dakotas, that they're just literally legislative districts and the chairs for those districts. In other words, they kind of smear across some county lines and they have multiple chairs in certain counties and so forth. And I've asked a couple of people, do you have a problem with that? Is that, do you feel like you're being represented as you only have one voice for four counties? Anyway, I digress. The whole point is that these chairs are the leaders and employers for these state legislators. And so we need to make sure that these chairs understand the Constitution and understand holding these state legislators accountable to the Constitution and their oath. Because when we get state legislators that are willing, and these other grassroots leaders, when they're both willing to start standing up for our liberty and standing up for the Constitution, that means they are willing to commit to protecting all of us from federal tyranny. So, anyway, as I always say, there are three primary reasons why you want to listen to the show and tape and or pull in these podcast tape. There's a novel concept. Anyway, record, pull it. I actually do the recordings for you. So get these podcasts. And the primary reason is that this really is the only show. There is not another show. I don't care how big their market is. You can Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, all of those guys, not one of them is asserting the actual solution to getting the federal government back into scope because they don't care about it. They give you lip service, but they really don't care, because if these problems go away, then what are they going to do? Do they have some other form of employment that they can fall back upon? Well, I guess Glenn Beck can be a comedian again, but most of these guys, they're kind of one-trick pony. They've been in the business so long, and they've been dominating their market share, getting up there, Rush Limbaugh, same. I would like to consider myself the big unemployer, and I need your help in doing that, because it's not about whether somebody has a job and is making a good living and they got good market space and they're dominating the airwaves. It is about protecting our posterity and our future liberties as well as our future sovereignty, and that has to be putting the Constitution first and getting that federal government back into scope. So that's the primary reason why you want to pull in these podcasts, or if you want to record them, by all means, go ahead. The content on the show will refer to content in previous shows. And so in so doing, I may reference something like Platonist. And if you're new to the show, you may not understand what that means. So listening to those podcasts, and actually I give you a little hint on what I'm talking about in each of these podcasts, and you want to go and go through those so that you can start pulling in some of these terms that I use, so that it starts making sense. That way you can take all of these threads and kind of weave together a fabric that will help you understand what Republic Review is and what we need to be doing. Bear in mind, so that's the second reason. Bear in mind for the third reason that the content that I cover on this show is not temporary. When I put things into a constitutional perspective regarding the news or what have you, that even those will withstand the test of time because you can reapply those constitutional paradigms today, 50 years from now, or 100 years from now. Because isn't it funny how we keep on seeing the exact same stunts and shenanigans? And each time, they're usually violating the Constitution. Like I mentioned the other day, when SCOTUS just basically passed on those strict abortion rules or laws in Arkansas, what they should have done was they should have said they had no jurisdiction. There's nothing in the Constitution that grants them jurisdiction to even review that, get that out of here, and get all these other cases out of here. But they would never do that because all of a sudden they would lose their importance and scope. And, I mean, think of yourself at work. How would you like to lose your roles and scope at work to be literally framed down to if you had expanded roles well beyond what you're supposed to be doing and you were far less important? Nobody would want that. So what they want to do is self-aggrandize, and that's what they've been doing out the gate. I mean, John Jay, I'm sorry for going on this little tirade, but John Jay, after he was relieved or asked to become the ambassador to work out the treaty with Spain over the Mississippi, when that became a debacle and that failed, well, they asked him, well, we'd like to put you back on the Supreme Court. And he said, no way, I don't want to do that. That's a do-nothing post because we don't have really anything to do other than, you know, resolving conflicts. And he was right. There's really very little that they can do within the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. It was basically all tailored towards the Constitution and ratified treaties. That's it. So any disputes between states and the federal government or states regarding commerce or what have you, there was a very minute amount of jurisdiction that the Supreme Court had. And they didn't like that, or at least Hamilton and Marshall said, we can grow this. We can outdo, you know, the expectations. And they did. And they've been applying tyranny from the bench. But again, those are the three reasons why you would want to download these podcasts. And that being said, you can get these podcasts at reclaimingtherepublic.org. So I invite you to do that. And I also want to remind you that I do have that 30-minute video, or at least watch the first 30 minutes of that video presentation that I have on YouTube. You can get to that on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Just go to the Take Action page. There's a link underneath the slides. I got some PDFs of the slides that I use. Have a party. Have some fun. Don't drink anything until afterwards. I mean, because you really want to comprehend it is what I'm trying to tell you and what I'm trying to inform you in that presentation. And so I guess it's that time for the old proverbial groveling. I do need help. I need support. I'm not going to turn away money. If some, you know, rich uncle came along and says, you know what, yeah, I need to help. What do you need? Here's a blank check. Not that I wouldn't take that. But if you're in a position where you don't have a lot of money, then I'm going to ask you to hold on to whatever you have. And I will ask you to support these legislators that we need to get across the finish line in some of these critical states, more specifically, Wyoming. And so to me, it's not about the money, but if you have a computer, if you have resources like a phone, you're computer literate, you understand some software and so forth, you can help. And so just send me an email. I have a couple of people now helping. And so what I need to do, though, is I kind of need to get you up to speed, because if you're going to be making phone calls, I'd like you to really understand at some basic level what you're going to be talking about, because I need to kind of expand the outreach into your states and into your leaderships and so forth. So anywho, by all means, the email address once again is info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And as always, and I'm going to preface this time for the first time, if you happen to find, you know, a late breaking news flash that the federal government is disbanding some department, some role, some responsibility or power, please call in, because that's huge. I want to be able to announce that and let everybody know that, you know, some tyranny has been trimmed away. But if that doesn't happen, then obviously I'm going to tell you, because each day I actually do check to see if there's been any roles, responsibilities, or powers that have been trimmed away. And there hasn't been today. And I'm sorry to report that. And so what that means is we need to continue. And, you know, we need to keep on planning as if they're never going to do it, because the chances are, and I'm probably right, I usually am on these things, they're not going to do it. We're going to have to force them to do it. So I need your help. And that's what we can do in working together in forcing the federal government back in that framework. And so I have this question that's standing for everybody. If you want to call in, what or where in the Constitution gives the federal government the authority to create and manage state land for reservations for any purpose at all, whether that be race, culture, whether that be plant life, whether that be little insect spotted owls or what have you? Where in the Constitution do they have the authority to arbitrarily grab land from a state and lock that down into some park, reservation, or what have you? And so if you've got that, you typically people would point to Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, I believe. And I don't find it there, so maybe you can find it for me. And I'd appreciate it if you did. Just call in. Again, that number to call in is 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP-TALK. And so I got 20 seconds left. Let me get this Red Pill Expo plug in here. We've got this Red Pill Expo coming up in the readout area. It is in the high life of Spokane, and it is from the 21st to the 23rd of June. Go to redpillexpo.org to get your tickets. Take a look at who is going to be there. There's even more than those folks you actually see. So please make sure that you at least look into it, because I want you to know what you're missing. And with that, as you can tell, I am up on heartbreak already. But when we come back, I will be, you know, shortly into the next segment, I should be getting into some comparisons between the Virginia ratification debates and the New York ratification debates. And so please stay tuned, and I'll be right back. Thank you very much. Did you know your overall health is connected to your dental health? As you get older, this becomes more and more important. If you're like me, going to the dentist can be terrifying. So for me to maintain my dental and overall health, I need a great dentist and staff who are sensitive to my fear, pain, and even my fear of the cost of dental work. This is why it took me almost 2 years to find a great dentist after moving into this area. Bottom line, I need a great dentist just to get into the chair, even for a regular cleaning. This is why I personally recommend Dr. Vaughn Tracy as not only a great dentist, but a great patriot and a dentist who cares about your comfort and health. You can find him at VaughnTracyDDS.com. That's VaughnTracyDDS.com. Then you can agree with me, it's great to have a great dentist. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so one of the things that I did find in the news that I thought was worth sharing, and that is, I'm not sure if you know who Congresswoman Dianne Black is, but she states that porn leads to school shootings. Well, I will tell you that she's, you know, not dead on that, but she at least is identifying one of the problems that is causing, some people call it the violent games. Some people call it, you know, some other things in our environment, environmental issues. But if you've listened to this show, I will tell you that it is our education system that is leading to shootings, these types of reprehensible crimes, moral turpitude, debauchery, even abortions, and the debasing of our society. Because our school system is teaching godlessness and secularism. And they have no compunction, and there's no way they will give back having prayer in school. There's no way they will allow the Bible to be used in school. As a matter of fact, it is the vestige of the anti-Christian church as well as efforts. It has been proven that everything they do, if you just take a piece of paper and just draw a line down the center of that, you know, notebook paper, and on one side, write Christian tenets or Christian doctrine, and then you literally start writing these things about creation and about the different doctrines of Christianity that most everybody all agrees with, regardless of faith. And then on the right-hand side, actually try to come up yourself, and you will have no hard time at all identifying a doctrine that is being taught in the school system that actually cancels or is the antithesis of the doctrine of Christianity. To me, you can't tell me that they're not preaching religion in school. They are teaching kids that Christianity is false. And it, in all honesty, there's no argument about this. I mean, when you really start breaking it down, they have been going after Christianity since the Scopes trial. When the Scopes trial went through in the 1920s and they allowed evolution to be the irrefuted truth, and now it's been completely refuted, but they're still not allowing intelligent design, creation, or any alternative. They have locked down the narrative, and there is no penetrating that membrane of the education system for the secular progressives. That's because academia is dead. And, or I should say, free academics. The freedom in academia has died a long time ago. And so I'm glad that she's bringing this up, and I'm glad that other people are starting to point out the morality, but you have to point at the school system, because it is the school system that is the petri dish for all of these germs to become infested and to become super germs and to basically pollute our society. I mean, come on, look at these kids that are doing these marches for life. I've been saying time and time again, and I tell people, nobody will refute this, that we have a generation that is in these petri dishes that cannot wait until their opportunity to vote, to throw away their liberties, and they're going to be proud in doing it. And the day they do, or that shortly after the day they do that, shortly after the day they throw away our liberties, and we cannot allow that to happen. That's why we need to start instituting Republic Review, so that those little parasites can start learning about the Constitution, because I truly believe that the only way they're going to learn about the Constitution is what I call cancer education. Cancer education is when you all of a sudden start affecting them, because nine times out of 10, the only reason somebody understands anything about cancer is because they have had somebody that is close that has been affected by it, and they, you know, loved one, good friend, or what have you. And they immerse themselves in trying to figure out how to help that person. You know, what is this particular cancer that you've got, and what does it do, and what can you do, and what can I do? That's cancer education. And I truly believe that as we start creating this movement, and once we get one state to stand up, people are going to start immersing themselves in Republic Review and this concept of auditing their contract, auditing the Constitution. How novel. How come nobody ever thought of this before? That is the number one question, and it's 100%. Every time I go speak somewhere, somebody comes up and says, how come nobody ever thought of this before? And, you know, it's really hard to explain that. Why is it that nobody else thought of it? I don't know. Maybe somebody did, but they realized there's no money in it, so they just basically shelved it, because I'm telling you, I'm not getting rich. I'm not. I am subsidizing this entire thing, and so that's why I need your help. I need as much help as I can get, and it's not about money. I just need your time, your resources, whatever we can do to work together, shoulder to shoulder, in fighting this problem. So anyway, as I always say, let me first state this, that if you're not using the Constitution to fight our battles, then we're at risk, almost certainty, that we will be losing these battles that we engage in. And the only defense that we have that can save us is the Constitution. And the only offense or weapon that we possess that can destroy and vanquish our enemies is the Constitution. And so, are you ready? Are you ready for some ratification debates? Well, as I figure it is probably apropos to say this, in contrast to those self-acclaimed front benchers and leaders in the market of conservative talk, as they continue giving their brilliant analysis on the details of what to do with all of this tyranny by using other things that are all folded from tyranny, I'm going to be here to tell you that it's all tyranny and we need to get rid of all of it, and we need to get the states back in charge of those things that have not been delegated to the federal government. So, as I say that, I would also ask you, when I'm reading these things, I want you to ponder, are the words of the founding documents, these ratification debates that I'm citing and I'm actually going to be reading today, are these the words of deceit? Are what these men stated during these ratification debates, were they lying to us? Or are the words that we've been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, bureaucrats, and everybody else that has been parroting this garbage about this supreme entity of the federal government can do anything and everything it wants to, that they're supreme of all things, that literally flies in the face of the truth. Because in all honesty, when we start going through the ratification debates, they clearly define that they don't have those powers. And so yesterday, I actually provided a great clarity, and it's worth repeating because it's literally one sentence. And this is from James Madison on page 59. And I believe that this is June 6th of 1788. And Madison basically and succinctly states, the powers of the federal government are enumerated. In other words, it's listed right there in the Constitution. It can only operate in certain cases, very specific to those enumerated powers. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. How more simple can that be? I mean, unfortunately, Hamilton was not that clear, not that succinct, not that concise. And so here's one of Hamilton's comments. This balance, and this is between the states and national government. This balance between the national and state governments ought to be dwelt on with particular attention, as it is the utmost importance. It forms a double security to the people. If one encroaches on their rights, they will find a powerful protection in the other. Indeed, they will both be prevented from overpassing their constitutional limits by a certain rivalship, which will which will ever subsist between them. I am persuaded that a firm union is as necessary to perpetuate our liberties as it is to make us respectable, and experience will probably prove that the national government will be as natural a guardian of our freedom as the state legislators themselves. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you understand what he's talking about, he was really talking about the legislators, but he completely glossed over how the Supreme Court would use its supposed authority, its unconstitutional authority, to basically start driving new laws and new agendas and changing what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional. And let me jump back to a Virginia quote by Mr. Lee of Westmoreland. And he basically says that it's time for a hard break, Mr. Mobley. And so I apologize. We will get back into Mr. Lee of Westmoreland as soon as we get back from the break. And again, please stay tuned. I've got a lot of ratification debates I want to go through. We've got two segments, so we can get into a lot of meat here. So hopefully you're hungry. We'll be right back. Thank you very much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Yes. And so let me add this for you. I want to kind of highlight the fact that Hamilton supposedly should have known. He should have known better than what was being provided in the New York ratification debates. And so here is Mr. Lee of Westmoreland in the Virginia ratification debates. Hamilton was in and out of the Constitutional Convention. Mr. Lee never attended. He was not a delegate. So he basically was relying upon what he heard and read out of the Federalist Papers and talking with Madison and so forth. And so his analysis as of the Constitution is of which I will read. I say that this new system shows a stronger, or in stronger terms than words could declare, that the liberties of the people are secure. It goes on the principle that all power is in the people, and that rulers have no powers but what are enumerated in that paper. When a question arises with respect to the legality of any power exercised or assumed by Congress, it is plain on the side of the governed. It is enumerated in the Constitution. If it be legal, it is legal and just. It is otherwise arbitrary and unconstitutional. Candor must confess that it is indefinitely more attentive to the liberties of the people than any state government. And he nailed it. I mean, here's a person that articulated far better than Hamilton in at least the last one. And let me find you another Hamilton. And so here's another day of Hamilton. I'll just use the term bloviating. And the interesting thing is, again, Hamilton, I hope I'm nothing like Hamilton, but here's a guy that really had a hard time really articulating, and he really had to take you several times around the woodshed before you realized that, you know, you're going to get a whooping. But what he said was, when these are obtained, all of our apprehensions of the extent of power are unjust and imaginary. What then is the structure of this Constitution? One branch of the legislature is to be elected by the people, by the same people who choose your state representatives. Its members are to hold their offices 2 years and then return to their constituents. Here, sir, the people govern. Here they act by their immediate representatives. You have also a Senate constituted by your state, or constituted by your state. And see, I want to stop here. A lot of times they talked about two constituents. The states were a constituent and the people were a constituent. Inside the states, the reason we have bicameral legislative bodies is because they recognized two sides or two levels of constituency. There are the people, and then there are the sub-element of government. States are divided up by counties and or parishes. And so those parishes or counties are a constituent in legislative powers. And therefore, that's why we have a Senate and a House of Representatives or representatives within each state capital, except for Nebraska, because they wanted to just be flagrantly violating the Constitution. This was completely lost in understanding American republicanism. So let me continue, and I'll repeat what he says here. He says, you have also a Senate constituted by your state legislatures, by men in whom you place the highest confidence, and forming another representative branch. Then again, you have an executive magistrate created by a form of election which merits universal admiration in the form of this government, and it is in the mode of legislation you find all the checks which the greatest politicians and the best writers have ever conceived. What more can reasonable men desire? Is there any one branch in which the whole legislative and executive powers are lodged? No. The legislative authority is lodged in three distinctive branches. Properly balanced, the executive is divided between two branches, and the judicial is still reserved for an independent body who hold their office during good behavior. And I want to I want to take a second here and at least point out the fact that I don't know if you know who the judge was over the Bundy trial, but the reason she changed her tone was because they were bringing up this little concept of how do you define good behavior? Because it looked like they were going after impeachment of her for her behavior of not abiding by the Constitution and so forth, if you've read some of that. But anyway, go on. This organization is so complex, so skillfully contrived, that it is next to impossible that an impolitic or wicked measure should pass the scrutiny with success. Now, what do gentlemen mean by coming forward and disclaiming against this government? Why do they say we ought to limit its power, to disable it and destroy its capacity of blessing the people? Has experience taught that such a government ought not to be trusted with everything necessary for the good of society? Sir, when you have divided and nicely balanced the departments of government, when you have strongly connected the virtue of your rulers with their interest, when, in short, you have rendered your system as perfect as human forms can be, you must place confidence, you must give power. And so, it's interesting how Hamilton does not have the same tone as identifying. He didn't go out of his way to say this is a very limited and defined government. It can only do these things. He talks in a grandioso way that, hey, that, you know, we're all going to be happy. We're all going to, you know, be blissful. And I honestly believe, because he was a litigious person, he was a lawyer already, I honestly believe he felt that he was figuring out ways that they could undercut this system, this process of the judiciary, so that they could start overreaching. And that's exactly what they started to do, because it didn't take long. It was less than 20 years after the ratification of the Constitution. It was less than 20 years before they actually started applying rulings. And I've mentioned this before, but it's important to reemphasize this. A court only gives you a determination on a case. All of these opinions is just babble. It just makes the lawyers feel good because they like lots of words. Like your host here, I like to say things, and I can go on and on and on and on. If Red State Talk Radio gave me 2 or 3 hours, I could probably easily come up with words to say. So that being said, these opinions have no base. They have no grounding. It is the outcome of the ruling. And so when Madison looked at the rulings, he couldn't say, well, that's an improper ruling. And he didn't. There was no threat in opinions because precedents did not exist within the judiciary. Within the federal judiciary, it made rulings. It had no allowance for case law precedents and so forth. This whole concept of constitutional law that these guys are shaping and forming it, that only makes the lawyers feel good, and it gives them all the control that they want to basically shackle us. And that, I'm telling you, the states would not have allowed the federal government to define it that way. That's why they said that they're limited to the jurisdiction within the Constitution, and that was their boundaries. So anyway, if I go back to the Virginia, and let me see, that was Mr. Lee of Westmoreland. Here's Mr. George Nicholas, and I think you'll find this interesting. Now we're talking about the necessary and proper clause, and this is kind of a long segment, but if anybody understands, the necessary and proper clause is one of the mystical clauses. There's four mystical clauses: the supremacy clause, the necessary and proper clause, the commerce clause, and the general welfare and defense clause. These clauses one can find within the Constitution, and they're in different locations. I believe the Supremacy Clause is in Article 6, the Necessary and Proper Clause is in Article 1, Section 8, as well as the General Welfare and Defense, and I believe the Commerce Clause are all in Article 1, Section 8. So the Supremacy Clause is a little bit different in a different place. But if you understand that the Supremacy Clause is literally the last line and is the last factor in the Constitution. As a matter of fact, when we get back from the hard break, I will actually read what it says in Article 1, Section 8, so that you can understand what Nicholas is talking about. And so we, let me see. Okay, I've got it ready to roll when we get back. And there it is. There's the hard break. See, I'm clairvoyant. I know these things are coming. Anyway, I will be right back after a word from our sponsors. So please stay tuned, and I will help clarify this grand sweeping clause called the Necessary and Proper Clause. Thank you very much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so to give you the background, precisely in what Nicholas is going to talk about, what he's going to refer to is the Necessary and Proper Clause. This is the very last subsection of Section 8. It's subsection 18. And it says, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing, so it's clear right there, the foregoing powers and all other powers vested in this Constitution. In other words, this Necessary and Proper Clause does not apply to anything outside this Constitution, especially those foregoing powers that are listed in Article 1, Section 8. In other words, those 17 powers that they listed there. And so this is what he says. He says, because they started calling this clause the dreaded clause if somebody just reads that they can create all laws necessary and proper, you know, then they're going to run rickshaw over all of us. And they have, because they have used that as unconstitutionally defined by the Supreme Court. But let me get into this. This is what Nicholas says. This dreaded clause runs in the following words: to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. The committee will perceive that the Constitution had enumerated all the powers which the general government should have, but did not say how they were to be exercised. It therefore, in this clause, tells how they shall be exercised. Does this give any new power? I say not. Suppose it had been inserted at the end of every power, that they should have the power to make laws necessary to, or they make laws to carry that power into execution. Would this have increased their powers? If therefore it could have increased their powers, if placed at the end of each power, it cannot increase them at the end of all. This clause only enables them to carry into execution the powers given to them, but gives them no additional new powers. But it is objected to for want of a Bill of Rights. So in other words, they were using the Bill of Rights against this necessary and proper clause. It is a principle universally agreed upon that all powers not given are retained. Where the Constitution, the general government, has general powers for any purpose, its powers are absolute. But where it has power, so I want to clarify, he's just saying if, you know, any constitution that has general powers for any purpose, its powers are absolute. Where it has powers with some exceptions, they are absolute only as to those exceptions. In either case, the people retain what is not conferred on the general government, as it is by their positive grant that it has any of these powers. Take a break here. And let me just point out that the Bill of Rights, if you understand Article 10, or this amendment, the 10th Amendment, that is where they basically stipulate, because this is the one amendment that they wanted to have in the Bill of Rights, that the states retained all their powers. And so he was basically stating that, and Madison stated this too many times, that if the Constitution did not enumerate any powers over religion, then the federal government has no jurisdiction, can't go there, can't do that. It is kept, and all religious powers are left to the people. Now, the states had established state religion, so they had this their finger in a particular faith and religion, and some states actually monopolized. Like in Virginia, the Anglican Church monopolized on religious teachings, proselyting, and so forth, and that's basically what got the ball rolling in Virginia to get rid of that state-recognized or sponsored church. Because Madison saw that Baptists were being incarcerated for teaching without a license. And so what they ended up doing was they basically started creating a state of tolerance. They got rid of these types of tyrannical laws. And then they ended up just basically displacing the Anglican Church from being a state-sponsored church. And slowly but surely, if you look at Virginia today, it is not dominated by the Anglican Church. And as a matter of fact, it's probably dominated by the secular progressive church now. But anyway, I've digressed. And so in England, this is the last part of what he's saying. In England, in all disputes between the king and the people, recurrence is had to the enumerated rights of the people to determine, are the rights in dispute secured? Are they included in Magna Carta, Bill of Rights, etc.? If not, then they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative. In disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse of the proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it. How much clearer do you need this? I mean, what they did in the Virginia ratification debates is they laid it out clearly that the federal government has to have the whatever they do, it has to be enumerated within the Constitution. So if they want to create a Department of Transportation, then they have to amend the Constitution so that it is now listed and enumerated in the Constitution. They just can't usurp that and say, we're going to do this. And the states go, oh, that's nice. So we appreciate that. Fact is that the states may be taking money. And as Madison said during the veto of the bonus bill, March 3rd, 1817, he said, even if the states allow this, it is still unconstitutional. And at any point in time, I am telling you, my friends, at any point in time when the states wake up, just like King Rohan woke up from Wormtongue's spell, and he recognized the fact that he was still king, he still had his powers, he wasn't dying, and that there were still some vestige of an army, a cavalry, and so forth, and he basically mustered what he had to go fight evil down by Mordor. I mean, go watch that movie, and that right there, that little scene of when Gandalf goes into Rohan, is the epitome of the states being under this spell by the federal government. They do not have to accept any of that. They do not have to continue down this path. At any point in time, we can wake up and throw these shackles off and say, you know, we're done. Yeah, that's it. We've had enough of your fun, and we really don't care to deal with it anymore. I can go on with the New York ratification debates, but I will tell you that you will not find really succinct, good arguments. I will be scrubbing them as I've gone through them, and they basically state the same thing, but it's you really have to wade through a lot of hyperbole, especially with Hamilton, because Hamilton wants to go into theories and so forth, and I'm not sure if he just did that to try to intimidate people. And I want to say this too, that I've been told that a lot of people get intimidated because they just don't understand the Constitution that well. And so when I start talking about it, maybe their eyes glaze over or what have you. That is not my point here, my friends. My point is, if you have questions, you know the old saying, there's no dumb question except the question's not asked. So if you don't understand something, then I'm going to do everything I can to restate that and rephrase that for you so that you can kind of understand this. I'm not trying to use the difficult languages and theories and so forth that Hamilton did. I believe that he made it hard to impossible. I think that's what he wanted to do, was befound and dumbfound, I should say, those fellow delegates that were the anti-federalists, because he knew they probably didn't possess the same literacy that he had. He spent a lot of time in school. And he, not that he wasn't a brilliant man, but he was a nefarious man with machinations to self-aggrandize and move the federal government back closer towards the king or a monarchy, where the sovereignty was held by the executive, and that executive would be able to be seated for their entire life if they desired, because that's what he wanted. And that's what he thought was best, because it has been argued even to this day that the best government is a noble monarchy, where the monarch actually, you know, takes care of their people. And I honestly believe that the best government was the one that was created that allowed the people to fend for themselves and figure things out and leave all the compassionate service, leave all the welfare and everything else to those in the churches and community organizations and so forth. Well, I'm out of time for the terrestrial waves. And so those of you who have tuned in and that are being broadcasted this show, thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow. I am G.R. Mobley. This is Reclaiming the Republic. And those who are not on Red State Talk, that are on Red State Talk Radio streaming and what have you, then I'll be right back to tell you what we're doing tomorrow. And just like that, I run out of time. I apologize. But what I want to do is I'm going to close the New York ratification debates, unless you have some favorite, you know, lines or favorite segments or what have you. Email me and I'll bring those up, because there's just a lot to go into with the New York ratification debates. But I am going to start picking up other ratification debates and start contrasting them to Virginia as well, because you will not find a better set of arguments. You will not find a laid out clarity of the Constitution in any of the ratification debates compared to, in my opinion, Virginia. Because, and that's just because I have a bias with Madison, and I do like what Nicholas did. I will be back tomorrow. This is G.R. Mobley, and I am Reclaiming the Republic with your help. God bless.